Hello, my loves. Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I'm your host, El Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We're also on the streaming platforms, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Podcast, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and more. If you are listening to us on one of those streaming platforms, give us some stars, give us some feedback, give us a little bit of love so more and more people can find out about our little podcast. And I have some late breaking, very braggy news to share with all of you. We just got listed as one of the top career podcasts for 2019. Whoop, whoop. So that makes it 2 years in a row that we have been listed as top career podcasts. And of course, could not have done it without all of you wonderful, amazing, beautiful, talented people. So thank you so much. And obviously, our wonderful, talented, amazing guests. It's just been such a wonderful, wonderful ride. And it just keeps on chugging through 2019. So last week, I had the pleasure of speaking with Chris Velasco. He's got this crazy rabid worldwide fan base. He is a video game composer. He's written for Fortnite, God of War, Assassin's Creed, so many more top line games. And he breaks it down exactly how he got to where he is today. It was definitely a struggle. He shares some really inspiring stuff about grit, about never giving up. So I urge you to go back and listen to that episode if you haven't had a chance to already. This week, I welcome to the Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job podcast stage the one and only Devin Joseph. He is the head of video at Genius. That's right. He is an incredibly creative powerhouse. He does their Verified series, their incredibly popular video series on YouTube, and so much more. And he is going to break it down exactly how he got to Genius and what led him there, what inspired him, and just some really, really good stuff. So make sure you listen to every word he says. But before we get to the interview, I want to play a track of Devin's. This is called Be Yourself, Be Confidence. Here we go.
One love that's monogamous. One gun that's monogynous. I love my mama, that's obvious. So that mean I'm not misogynist. Do unto others as you would do to you. Or something like that, check it. It's tattooed on my back. Just last week I made my decision that I got 20/20 vision. No, I ain't seen a physician. Be yourself, be confident.
Hey Devin, welcome to Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I always start with my guests. I love hearing about their relationship with music, especially from a very early age. So can you describe for us your first memories of hearing music in your household?
Yeah, growing up, my parents, I always remember, them having some sort of, large boombox or stereo or, something playing music throughout the house, especially on the weekend. My mom, when she would clean, she would play, if it was Sunday, she'd play some Yolanda Adams, some gospel music. My dad is really into, old school hip hop, so Rakim, he's a big Nas fan. So, music was always just sort of a part of my childhood growing up. They were always playing music throughout the house.
Nice. And then what was your first kind of music crush? What was the first band or singer?
So this is pretty embarrassing thinking back on it now, but I remember my first person who your parents play music and you listen to that, but the first time that I was oh, this is something I am into was Aaron Carter. It was to Come Get It. Yeah. So I think that I just saw it was when those infomercials would play on TV, and I think I just saw it from there, and I was hey, I told my dad, I want to, get that CD. And, to their credit, they were very supportive. They, took me to the music store. They let me buy the Aaron Carter CD. And then my dad snuck in. He's like, maybe we should get the little Bow Wow CD, too. Maybe you'll like that. So he snuck that in. But, yeah, early on, I would say, something I'm grateful for from my parents is that they sort of let me discover things on my own when it came to music too. I was really into sort of weird kid music. I would get like those weird mix CDs that just had like compilations of kids music, and they were just, you know, they were supportive. They let me listen to what I wanted to listen to.
I love it. I love it. That's so great. So walk us through, now you're going into like high school and you're starting to get an idea of what you really like to do, and just tell us about that. Like, was it sports? Was it theater? Or like, what? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, you know, from a pretty early age, I was pretty obsessed with video. My dad bought our family's like first camcorder when I was 6 or 7, and I would always play around with that. You know, he would record me, I would record my cousins and my friends, and like make little shows and stuff. So, you know, from a pretty early age, I knew that I wanted to do something in involving video. And then the high school that I went to was a brand new. The first year that it opened was my freshman year. And they just so happened to have a really great film program. They put a lot of money into it. And, you know, I had a great film teacher. And so I gravitated towards that very quickly. So, you know, I would be running around the halls shooting. We would do this thing where we'd shoot music videos to songs that already existed. So, you know, we would get two people in there lip syncing the video, and then we'd create little storylines and stuff. So that was really cool for me to, like, be able to put together music videos in high school. We'd put together short films and stuff like that. So, pretty early on in high school, I gravitated towards video. You know, I never knew exactly what I wanted to do with it, but I knew that I wanted to do something with video, and, you know, particularly music was always something that I enjoyed doing along with video. So, you know, me and my friends would shoot a ton of music videos, some original stuff that we would shoot for our friends, but a lot of it too, just being like, hey, like, you know, this is awesome Kanye track. Let's create a music video for it.
Was there any particular music videos or films that really resonated with you that were out there? Like, tell us about like your influences.
You know, I'd say in high school, Spike Jonze is a pretty big influence on me. You know, the stuff that I loved, his sort of trajectory of going from making music videos to making feature-length films. And I, you know, like high school me was like, that's what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to start out by doing some music videos and doing some cool stuff with my friends. You know, he also did skate videos, and a lot of my friends skated and did skate videos as well. So he was a huge influence, sort of. And I was a huge, 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 huge Kanye fan in high school. So, you know, pretty much everything that he did was, you know, incredible to me, and like a really big, he's played a very big role in sort of, you know, how I got into music and the type of music that I started listening to, but also in terms of visuals and music videos. And, you know, like my first concert ever was Kanye's Glow in the Dark tour my sophomore year of high school. And that like sort of blew my mind, seeing, you know, a hip hop production on that scale. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely, you know, Spike Jonze and Kanye, I would say, were definitely some of my earlier influences.
Yeah, and it's funny because Kanye uses and collaborates with these visual artists, and I think it was Kanye West that introduced me to, I hope I'm saying his name right, Takashi Murakami, the Japanese animated artist. And there was another artist, I think it was the Power video, that's like crazy, crazy, like complex, all these like different moving parts. And because of that video, I got to see like an art exhibition of the artist when he was in LA. And it was only because of the Kanye West, I think me and a lot of other people. But it was like incredible, because here's Kanye like supporting and exposing, you know, a whole new audience to these artists' work. So it's pretty incredible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, yeah. You know, I actually stole Late Registration from my uncle because I was just playing it so much, he pretty much just gave it to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say that, you know, that was after the Aaron Carter phase, like, you know, that was like, Kanye was definitely like the next wave for me in terms of I'm an artist, and really gravitating towards that.
And did you, when you were making videos, was the emphasis, I'm just curious, in terms of your vision, was the emphasis more on story, on visuals, or all of the above?
I would say it changed throughout sort of my time in school. So, you know, the first real videos I'd say I've started to make was more so in like middle school. You know, I would be on Windows Movie Maker and filming stuff on my mini DV, and a lot of that stuff was like comedy driven sort of stuff, skit based. And then in high school is when I actually started to care more so about like visuals and, you know, really focusing on shots and sequencing in them and, you know, the right way. That became a lot more interesting to me in terms of like, you know, stuff can be funny, but like, how do we make this stuff visually interesting? And that's when I started to do a bit more of the serious stuff as well in terms of music videos and, you know, working with my friends.
That's very cool. And obviously you had a passion for it, which is amazing and kind of what you need, you know, if you're going to be an artist. So tell us about after high school. Did you go to film school or what did you do?
Yeah, so in high school, you know, I talked to a lot of people who were in the industry because I was curious about what type of school I should go to. And they all pretty much stressed that, like, don't pay too much attention to, you know, the whole film school thing. Like, you know, like, go to school and learn, but, like, film school is not really going to teach you what you need to know about the industry. Like, focus more on just going to a place that you feel like you're going to learn a lot because you're just going to learn on the job. So, you know, I went to American University in Washington, D.C., and they have a film program. It's not like an NYU sort of program, but, you know, I like the location and I like the school a lot. And even though the film program wasn't as intensive as something like an NYU, you know, based on all the talks that I had with people beforehand, I was like, I can make this work because I always knew that, you know, regardless of what I was learning in school, I would always be doing stuff outside of school.
And sometimes it's interesting, you know, the parallel with music and musicians. It really, and I've said this before on my podcast, I'm sure people are sick of this, but going to music school is kind of like, it's really interesting. It's 50-50 right down the middle. Some people say, yes, absolutely, I'm so grateful that I went to music school and really helped me, you know, develop my technique. And other people say, no, I didn't go to music school, and I don't regret a second of it because I was able to form my own voice and not worry that I was doing it wrong or being too overly influenced by other artists or other standards. So, again, it's kind of like apples and oranges. It's really, there's no guarantee of success either way, it seems.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, I was definitely, I would say, right after leaving school, I was a bit disappointed in sort of the film program there. But, you know, a lot of the other stuff that I was able to pick up on in terms of writing and, you know, just journalism in general, I think was super beneficial for me, especially, you know, as my career progressed. So, you know, I wouldn't change it for anything.
How did your filming change through college? Like, how did it develop?
So in college, actually, my sophomore year, So there were three of us knew each other, and the way they had the dorm room set up, there were four people in the dorm, so we had one random person. And he, like, had some crazy stories, and, like, it was just wild. So we actually, we were like, this is, like, incredible. Like, we need to do something with these stories and, like, make them something. So we were joking one day that, like, hey, we should, like, make these into songs. So there happened to be like an open mic night coming up. We didn't realize it at the time, but it was for one of the religious fraternities on our campus. So we were like, we should put together some songs, perform at this open mic night, and then we could sort of turn these into music videos. So that sort of, you know.
I'm sorry to laugh. That's awesome, though, that the motive is not like, let's write songs, let's be musicians. Your motive is like, we want to make some kick-ass videos.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, from the beginning, we were like, you know, we put together these songs because, like, the stories were, you know, incredible. Like, for example, there was this one instance where we were all sitting around talking about one of our friends who, you know, at American University, a lot of people come from money. So we were talking about how one of our friends, you know, comes from a lot of money, and, like, it's great that he doesn't, like, flaunt it around or, like, put it in our face. And then this, you know, this kid who was our roommate, he sort of, he's like, you know, I don't mean to brag, but I also come from a lot of money, which we already knew. But then he's like, you know, I don't spend a lot either, but what I do flaunt on is like my t-shirts. And he would wear these like t-shirts that kind of, sort of look like Ed Hardy t-shirts. So someone asked him like, oh, like, you know, like how expensive is that t-shirt? And then he's like, oh, this one, it's really expensive. It's $30. And I just remember thinking, like, at the time, like, obviously, like, $30 is, you know, like, it's a little more than you would want to pay for a t-shirt. But it's not the, like, the amount of money that you would brag about, like, oh, my God, this t-shirt is so expensive. It's $30. You know? Right. So, like, we just thought that was so funny. And, you know, we ended up turning that into a song, into a video called $30 Tees, where it's, like, you know, the premise is like these dudes bragging about like, you know, my t-shirt is $30 and nothing else can match up to it. But yeah, like, you know, from the beginning, it was the idea was always to like, all right, how do we make these songs and turn these into visuals? So a big part of what we did was we performed a lot on campus, actually. So, you know, we didn't know that we were going to be performing for a religious fraternity. So that was a big bit of a surprise. You know, mm-hmm. as we come in, like, dresses, like, rappers and stuff. But, you know, that went off really, really well, and they responded really positively to it. So a big part of what we did on campus was we would perform and, like, we would bring, like, projections. So we had what we called it, like, the Nature Walk Tour. So, like, we would, like, it was kind of weird because it's, like, in the middle of everyone else coming up and doing, like, hey, all right, I'm doing an acoustic set. And we would do this thing where we would, like, blow it all out and, like, have projections and, like, you know, like, sound effects and, like, a storyline for, like, you know, a 10-minute set basically in the middle of it. And then we would turn, you know, all those songs. We would make videos for them as well.
I love it. I mean, definitely unique, right? It's like you're not just sitting on a stool with a guitar, like, you know, expressing your feelings.
No, it was very jarring sometimes because, you know, yeah, we would go on after the person who would be sitting doing acoustic guitar and, like, you know, singing their heart out, and then we'd come up there and, you know, we'd have, like, wind sound effects and, like, you know, we'd come on there with our outfits and be rapping about, you know, $30 t-shirts.
That reminds me of, like, one of my early shows, and it's like you're part of a lineup, and I was, like, one of the first to go on. And my stuff is, like, really sugary, sweet synth pop, right? And, like, I sing about, like, my ex-boyfriends and, like, love. And I remember I, like, played my last song, and it was really sweet and lovely. And then I get off the stage, and, like, immediately it's a hardcore. And they're like, rah, 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 rah. It was just like the audience was like, what the fuck? But it was amazing. I was like, it's so funny. I was like, I don't know who the promoter is for this show, but man, like, it's a trip. It's a trip. So I love it. I love that you were like keeping people on their toes. That's so great.
Oh, yeah. We would get, people would either be super confused and just like not get it at all, or it would like click and then it would be like dying.
I love it. That's so great. And I'm so glad that you had, you know, partners in crime, that you had people that were part of your tribe that you could, you know, collaborate and do this together.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So tell us about, did you start looking at internships? What were your next steps in looking at terms of a career?
Yeah, so like I said, I went to school in D.C. So I knew that, like, you know, in terms of internships, I would have to look in New York or L.A. I knew, like, basically D.C.'s video world is very documentary-based, and that's not really what I was into doing. So I just went online, and I would just look at the production companies behind all of my favorite sort of music videos.
Ooh, smart. That's so smart.
Yeah. So, you know, I just started reaching out to them, and I got interviews with two production companies, and I ended up working with this company called Good Company, who worked on Kanye's Runaway video. They worked on his Mercy video. They did a bunch of stuff with him. Yeah, you know, they didn't have any internship postings or anything on their site. I just, you know, found an email, reached out, and they reached back out to me, set up an interview, and then that was my junior year, I believe. So then I set it up that when I went home for the summer that I was going to be interning with them.
Great. That's so great. Now, I assume it was unpaid?
Yeah. So I was a office PA. So it was unpaid for the workout that I would do in the office. But the great thing was that they had a ton of shoots. And, you know, most people who work there, they would do 1 or 2 days a week and then, you know, go and do another job. And I had been working while I was at school, so I had saved up some money and I was at home. And they would pay for me to come into the city. So I, you know, was fortunate enough that I was basically like, I want to be there every single day. You know, like, I just want to be around what's happening. So I was able to go on a ton of shoots, and they would pay me when I would do the shoots. So, you know, it was an unpaid for internship in terms of me being in the office, but it worked out because I was there the most often that I got to go on the most shoots. So I would do a shoot or two a week and be a PA and get paid at, you know, the PA rate for those shoots.
That's so smart. That's so great. Because I think that's always the struggle is, like, how do you get into these production companies? And you said really good. You were pounding the pavement, making calls, making outreach. And then secondly is, like, how do you support yourself? So that's brilliant, you know, that you were able to find a way that you were able to still eat and, like, have a place to sleep. And that's so smart. And that sounds like an incredible internship.
Yeah, it was great. It was a really, really, really great learning experience. So I did it for that summer. And then, you know, during breaks at school, I would come back and shoot stuff. But it was, you know, really taught me a lot in terms of, like, the pacing and, like, problem solving really quickly. And the people that I worked with were really, really great. And, you know, they looked out for me. So it was a great experience.
So you obviously also built up some relationships there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, I still talk to those guys. You know, we still keep in contact to this day.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, so what happened upon graduation?
Yeah, so the initial plan was I was going to go back there to get somebody to work full time, and that didn't end up working out just because they couldn't hire at the time. So then I was in the, you know, it was panic mode. It's like, oh, no, graduating. Mm-hmm. I had a plan. It's kind of been blown up. You know, what's next? So I spent the next couple months just looking at all the sort of opportunities that were available. And then one that really stood out to me was this internship at Business Insider. So, you know, at the time, you know, it wasn't like I was a avid Business Insider reader, but what appealed to me about their internship was that it was, like, interns got to do things, like, immediately. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, you come in here, you get to make videos. And a lot of the other internships that I'd seen, like, you know, I interviewed at this Color House, and they were basically like, hey, you can come in here basically for the first 2 years. You're going to be sort of like a facilities manager, you know, doing the mail room, things of that nature. And then, you know, after 2 years, we might be able to start training you on some of these programs. And I was just like, I don't know if I could just sit around for another 2 years and not be doing, you know, actual video work.
Yeah.
But the Business Insider opportunity, they were like, no, you come in air and you can do things immediately. So I was like, you know, the topic is not exactly what I gravitate towards, but, you know, mm-hmm. being able to work in video and, like, actually produce things that go out into the world was super important to me. So I applied and, you know, I got the internship.
That's fantastic. So did you feel like you got a lot of autonomy there, that you were kind of able to do your own thing, or in terms of your creativity and your vision?
Oh, yeah.
In terms of making
these
videos?
I think I kind of lucked out because digital video, you know, is still very new, and that was in 2014, so it was even newer of a thing. So it wasn't like I was going into a place where things were set in stone and everybody had everything figured out. We were all sort of figuring it out together, you know, so they mm-hmm. were very open to me trying things. And, you know, like, I was able to make a video about me going to a Kanye concert, you know, like, that's not something you would typically think that Business Insider would cover, but they were very open to just sort of letting me explore.
I'm curious to hear, what's your take in terms of the kind of the evolution of video in terms of technology, and the fact that it seems everybody with a smartphone can make a video.
Yeah.
So much now is captured on video, for good or bad. So I'm just curious, what's your take on that? Like, how do you think that that's changed kind of the world of film and video?
I think it's just really put a more of an emphasis on sort of quality, right? Because it's such a crowded area right now. You know, every single publication has digital video. Everybody, you know, people who aren't at publications, people who, you know, YouTubers, everyone's making video. So, you know, like, it's a lot harder to sort of break through, but it still seems that, you know, the stuff that's really good happens to find the home. So, you know, as crowded as it may seem now, it seems like, you know, it seems like, especially with, you know, sites like YouTube, that like the stuff that it's super quality and the stuff that really connects with people still tends to do well.
And what about like viral videos? Is that something that there's still kind of this, you will know more about this than me, but just there's still this idea of like, we can make a video go viral, and there's been so many like crash and burns of that variety, you know, people trying to create a viral video. What's your take on that?
I think it's just like, I think if any one of us knew exactly what it took to make a viral video, you know, we'd be billionaires. You know, it's like, it just changes so frequently. You can never really predict, like, you know, with work that I do at Genius, like we have ideas of things that we think are going to perform well, but there really isn't a formula to just make something go viral. You know, like a lot of times the stuff that I see that does go viral, I'm always like, why is this thing the thing that has taken off? You know, so it's a weird world, the viral world. It's not an easy thing to predict.
And what about this whole thing with like deep fakes? Like, is this something that, what do you think about that? Like, do you think it's going to be the next, I don't know, big thing? Or what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's like, it's weird because, like, you know, in the past you think, like, if something's on video, then, you know it's legit. But now we're getting into a place where it's like, nope, it might not be legit. And I think it's just sort of like a reflection of everything else happening just in media in general with, you know, we've said this over and over again with the fake news and all that stuff. It's just like, I feel like it's just an extension of that. And I think the only way to really counter that is just media literacy, you know, like not seeing something and just running with it, like doing your research and like actually checking to see where did it come from, you know, how did it get to this level, what sort of story behind it.
Yeah, I think it's like the, what is it, the Snopes, like they're just gonna have to become like their own media empire to just like keep track of all the different things that come out. But I think it is really interesting though too, because again, I see parallels with music, because when artists sample like old tracks, there's always this sort of cry, the old song was so much better, or you don't know where this actually came from, this came from this. And so there's, what's happening is that there's now more emphasis and importance about, you know, keeping these older tracks, you know, making sure that people know about them and that there's sort of a preservation almost going on with these older tracks. And I'm sure it is the same in film and will continue to be the same in film, you think?
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure.
So interesting. Okay, so Business Insider, you're making all these cool videos, and then tell us your next steps.
Yeah, so, you know, I signed on. It was supposed to be a six-month internship, and, you know, two months into that internship, I actually got hired. And, you know, when I joined the team, it was 10 people, and we were very quickly growing. So, you know, I went from being an intern to being full-time as an associate producer very soon after that.
Wow. So cool.
Like, you know, I got there just at the right time, I felt. Soon after I got hired full-time, it was, you know, the election stuff started coming up. So they sort of tasked me with figuring out, like, what news video looks like. I had a small team, and we were, you know, just sort of hitting the ground running in terms of the election and, like, getting those videos out there and, like, figuring out what clips would connect with people. And people, you know, as you know, around the 2016 election, were very excited about everything that was happening. So, you know, that performed really, really well for us. And I had a great team. I think there was five of us when we started, and we were making just a ton of videos. They were super dedicated. And then, you know, that was going so well that they eventually said, hey, why don't you oversee the entire Business Insider team? So that was, you know, in addition to the news stuff, more of the evergreen sort of strategy stuff. So I was working with that team. And yeah, you know, when I first got a Business Insider, the video team, like I said, was 10 people. And by the time that I had left, they had grown to include Insider, which is sort of like the lifestyle site as well, Tech Insider, which is like tech and science, and there's like, you know, right now there's over 100 people on that video team, so really exploded in the 4 years that I was there.
That's like your postgraduate degree right there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wow,
learned
that's
a
amazing.
Lot. Learned a lot.
Yeah. What I'm curious to hear, what's your opinion in terms of media? Because obviously there's this, well, the whole fake news thing, but there was already this sort of like, oh, you know, news is dying because print, no, there's no longer print. And then we've gone into this whole digital media platform. And I mean, let's face it, I think Trump has actually like contributed to the success of a lot of media companies, right?
That
oh, yeah.
Like CNN,
sure.
And
they've just blown up because it's 24/7 coverage of like, what the fuck is he going to do next?
Exactly.
It's just insanity.
So what's your take on that? I mean, obviously Business Insider is a great example. They blew up to 100 people on their digital media team. Do you just see news and media just continuing to evolve in that fashion?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, like, I think what digital media companies are able to do, and I think why they're so big, specifically in terms of politics, is that, like, you know, you can just get the information that you need. Like, you know, so much of, you know, when I'm home with my parents, so much of what they watch is they'll just have CNN on, and, you know, they'll have a 30-minute show. And, you know, all the information that you get from that show, you could have gotten 5 minutes. You know, it's like, just show me the clips that I need to see. Give me the context that I need, you know. And I think that's where we saw so much success when I was at Business Insider, is that, like, you know, we were able to watch a hour and a half, 2 hour debate and pick out all the big moments and put a compilation together of that, because, you know, people don't have 2 hours to just sit around and watch a debate, but they can put together 5 minutes to see, all right, here's what I highlight, here's what people are talking about.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And that's, I think, how we're consuming media and content nowadays. You know, it's like bite-sized chunks. So 4 years at Business Insider, and then what happened?
Yeah, then, you know, like I said, the team had grown really, really big, and I was managing, the time I left, I was managing our YouTube team. So we were focused on making, you know, longer content, but for online. So between, like, you know, 5 to 7 minutes. And I just got to a point where the content, like, I wasn't really in love with the content. And, you know, there was this opportunity at Genius where they were hiring a head of video, and sort of what they were looking for was exactly what I was doing at BI. And I'd been a big fan of Genius beforehand. You know, I'm a huge music fan. I've always watched all of their videos. You know, at a certain point, we were starting to make a lot more music, digital video to sort of compete with them. But, you know, the team that was doing it was much, much smaller. So I, you know, sort of jumped at the opportunity to sort of join their team and what they were doing, because I was such a big fan and the content really resonated with me.
Can you just tell our listeners a little bit more about Genius? Because I think some people will just associate it with just, like, lyrics, you know, like, if you need to know lyrics.
Yeah, so it started as, you know, Rap Genius, which was a lyric site where you'd basically go to, you know, not only see what the lyrics were to rap songs, but sort of the meaning behind them. So, you know, there's these things called annotations where people break down, you know, what the lines actually mean. So that's kind of where it started, and it's since grown to just, you know, this sort of huge media company where, you know, what really drew me to them in the job is that, like, everything that Genius does goes back to music knowledge and breaking down, you know, music knowledge, which I think is extremely rare in this sort of media landscape today. You know, a lot of music publishers and sort of music digital companies don't solely focus on music. You know, they're really lifestyle focused. They focus on a lot of other things. But, you know, the thing that appeals to me about Genius is that they really, really care about the music, and all that other stuff is, like, sort of, you know, we don't even pay attention to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a result of artists needing to be entrepreneurs to make money these days. And so they're going to have branding and marketing and fashion and shoes and all these different aspects of their brand name, their career. Whereas, yeah, to just focus solely on the music, that is, I agree with you. It's sort of becoming a lost art form, especially MTV is essentially no longer.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you heard of Music Sermon on Twitter?
I have not.
Naima Cochran, I was lucky to have her on the show. So her thing is kind of what I was talking about before. She does these like Sunday sermons on Twitter. It's great. This whole feed thread Twitter moment about the history of music, particularly like hip hop, R&B music and black artists. So she will go back and break down like, you know, hip hop in the 90s, black movie soundtracks. Like she'll take different. And again, it's like she's essentially like a musicologist, a historian. It's interesting because I think with what you're doing at Genius, it's sort of like you're doing that in real time. I feel like, you know, your maybe some of your videos will like end up at the Smithsonian. Do you know what I mean? Because they're interviews essentially with the artists themselves in real time where they are talking about why they created the song, what the song means, etc.
Exactly. Like, we like to joke sometimes, but, like, this is, like, the 60 minutes of music, you know? Like, you know, there's, we are the people who are, you know, like you said, documenting what these songs are about, you know, drawing the connections for people, because there's not a lot of places out there that are doing that.
Yeah, and the other thing is, too, and I'd love to hear your take on it, is especially the younger music fans, the younger generations of music fans, they feel like all the institutions, like the Grammys and all the award shows, and it's like it's all bullshit because they essentially ignore their favorite artists because their artists aren't, they haven't gotten the traditional, they haven't gone the traditional conventional path of the artists before them. They have millions of followers on Spotify, and yet they'll never be on Billboard or they'll never win a Grammy. So I think that, yeah, there's a hunger for that. There's a hunger for a platform where they can see their artists recognized and honored and supported for, you know, what they're doing, because essentially the sort of the gatekeepers are kind of ignoring them.
For sure. And, you know, that's something that, you know, before I joined the company, I was really impressed by, is that they're really, really good at finding these emerging artists on platforms like SoundCloud and YouTube. And, you know, these people with huge followings that the, you know, bigger media landscape has, you know, not noticed yet, and sort of, you know, being a place for them to sort of come and like sort of like their first step for emerging artists. You know, Genius was one of the first people on Blueface, you know, and now Blueface is huge and he's all over the place, but you know, he did a verified with them a couple months ago, and it's like to be able to sort of find these artists who are emerging, who, you know, are just starting to see some buzz, and then get them on the platform and see how that resonates with our audience has been awesome.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that's so smart. Do you happen to know, like, how do they find these emerging artists? They just have researchers literally on all the different platforms, you know, seeing what's starting to trend?
So the great, like, you know, the Genius website, there's so much data there, you know, with the song pages and annotations, and there's like a huge community. And, you know, like I like to joke that Genius is really a tech company because our data team is so, so, so good. They are able to sort of dig into our data and find out, all right, you know, this song is starting to see some buzz. You know, these phrases are being used more and more. You know, we did a video recently about how drip has become such a big thing. So, you know, there's a lot of data that we are able to gather from our website. And that sort of informs the artists that we're bringing in and the people that we see as emerging.
That's really interesting. Do you have any advice for artists like that are just starting out or, you know, really trying to get a foothold, how they can gain more attention from, say, Genius?
I would just say, like, work on, like, building out your community. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, artists are told to sort of, like, go mainstream right away and just, like, try to appeal to everyone. But, you know, a lot of the artists that we feature on Genius are not for everyone. You know, they're very niche, but they really connect with their audience. And that's the advice that I would give, is find your audience and really connect with them. Don't worry so much about appealing to everybody. You know, I think that some of the biggest artists that have blown up going through Genius are, you know, like, who would know that Blueface would end up being as big as he is, you know, like, but he sort of just doubles down on what he's good at and it pays off.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great point. And that's sort of becoming more and more the advice that's being given, especially as you're saying, because the field is so saturated, right? It's like the competition is so fierce so that you're not going to be able to get the majority market share. You have to, like you said, find that niche audience that's willing to stick by you if you can just continue to generate the type of unique sound, content, et cetera, that they want.
Exactly.
Are you still able to work on your own creative projects, or is everything sort of being funneled into Genius?
No. Like, me and so my roommate for college is still my roommate now, and we're still doing, you know, a lot of the stuff that we were doing in college, putting together songs, making music videos. So, yeah, that has continued. You know, that's been something that's been very important to me, is, like, just doing stuff outside of work. Mm-hmm. Just to keep the creative juices flowing, so that, yeah, that has continued.
Is there a place that we can see your work?
Yes. You can check us out at wearemaurice.us. There we have, you know, sort of our latest videos and all of our stuff.
Cool. And then do you want to just give your corporate overlords a shout out? Do you want to tell people how to find Genius Verified, etc.?
Yes. So we're at youtube.com/genius, and there you'll be able to check out all series. And you can also go to genius.com, and where we have our videos on there as well. But, you know, you can check out all of our content. We have a great content team, fantastic articles, and a great community team as well.
Okay, awesome. You have been such a wonderful guest. Thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
My special thanks to Devin Joseph for being on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? And again, you can find Devin at maurice.us or vimeo.com/wearemaurice. And obviously, you can find Genius at genius.com or go to their YouTube channel, Genius, to check out all the amazing verified videos. Okay, my loves, thus ends another week of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I'm your host, L. Ariel, and we can be found on the social media at Music Jobs Podcast. Or you can check me out, L. Ariel, on my website, lariel.music.com. That's lariel.music.com. Or on social media, give me a wave, say hi, at lariel.music. Okay, my loves, we are going to keep on hustling. It's spring. So take good care. What do I always say? I say keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you give up.